Kia ora and welcome to the Machinist Therapy Hotline. We are once again back. And this time we've got a band with us called Shanus. And he is getting his music ready and we're going to kick it off. So welcome, Shane Paul.
Yo, yo.
And what music have you got for Tony Clouser?
Oh, shit, I just turned it off.
Oh, come on, dude. Terrible.
John Wayne would never use a surge protector.
And Albert Rudzinski.
Oh shit, I had this on mute.
What the fuck is going on?
I don't know. Can we start again? Let's just press the link.
I could do like a Miami Vice, like.
Yeah, do that for everybody. Do that for everyone. So I'll do the intro and then I'll go, and up next is.
Is that Calvin?
And then you'll do your Miami Vice and then I'll go Shane Paul and then we'll do the same for Tony. Yeah, okay. G'day and welcome to the Machinist Therapy Hotline. We have once again got together and we'll be talking shop and machining and all sorts of other stuff. But of course, before we start, we need to make sure we have the dream team. Shane Paul.
Yo, yo.
And Tony Clouser. You got to do it again, Shane. Like for everyone.
I've got shit to do, man.
What is happening?
Let's forget the music. Let's just do what we normally do.
Okay.
G'day, welcome to the Machinist Therapy Hotline. I'm Jody Tuckwell, and we are going to be kicking things off very shortly, but first of all, I need to make sure we have the best team available for our discussions. Tony Clouser.
Hey, how's it going, people?
Albert Rudzinski.
Hang on, I had this muted. I'm eating nachos.
Shane Paul.
You going to get all those, or can I have some?
You can have some.
Thank you.
Cool. So, without further ado, let's get on with the podcast.
I'm hanging in there. I guess Jody went to go wrangle one of his goats back into getting away or something. I don't know.
Is that the same as like going to choke a chicken?
I think that might be what they call it down there.
I'm gonna wrangle my goat. I've heard of roping the mule, but never wrangle. Well, sorry, he's back.
I've just sent Selma out to go and get him. He's
well, that's kind of kinky.
Oh man, they are terrible to keep in goats. They like fucking Houdini. They just get out of everything. It's amazing. The goats.
Yeah, goats are goat weird.
You know, goats are lovely. Goats are lovely animals.
You know, you guys see that clip I put up a couple weeks ago and then behind my shop running up and down the railroad track?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had 120 or so, maybe a little bit more. Anyway, the town of Ukiah paid $75,000 for them goats to roam one end of the track to the other for a week to eat weeds. Can you believe that shit?
It's probably cheaper than paying people to pull them out.
I don't fucking know. They used to make the prisoners do it. We don't have them anymore.
Yeah, right.
Because our fucking governor released them all. Don't want to get COVID.
California's been like a whole mess of shit.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
But they, I mean, well, one, yeah, having to pay that much, I guess, for goats to eat the weeds is, well, I don't know. They're pretty efficient at eating weeds.
Oh, yeah. Fair. They were. They did a nice job. I would have took my weed eater out there for $75,000. That and a fucking 36 pack of Coors Light, I'd get that shit done in the weekend.
I can't just see that 36 pack of Coors Light. You'd be like on your ass in the middle of a field with a weed whacker just laying next to you.
That would have been pretty cool though. I mean, just having those goats there all the time, like that would have been quite an attraction for
It was.
All the kids would have been down there going, look at the goats. Wow.
They were. They went and got the kids, and the kids were petting them, and they had dogs that were watching them. And it was pretty cool until the fucking homeless people let them out like the last day they were here. And they all got loose and ran down the fucking road. And a couple of dogs got loose, but they got everybody back home safe. But yeah, we got some real mental motherfuckers here.
Yeah, I heard, because I think they did something like that in Los Angeles as well, didn't they? They were trying to clear, like, scrub on the side of hills, so they just got, like, electric fencing, and suddenly there's all these goats everywhere, and I think, what a great idea.
They did that on our freeway, 101 down there in Sonoma County. I was coming home one day, and I was like, holy shit, and Katie's like, no, I saw that on the news. They're just letting them, they electric fence them, they got a travel trailer, a guy stays there with them, and he just kind of moves them, you know, from lot to lot, and they mowed that shit down quick.
Yeah, and it's actually quite a like you say, it's quite an attraction, especially if you live in the middle of a city and suddenly there's like fucking 150 goats in the middle of the city. That'd be pretty badass. Because you said your brother's a goat farmer as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, my little brother. Yeah, he's got a dairy.
Shit, he should start farming them out for $75,000.
No
2 weeks work. That'd be pretty cool. Yeah,
give their udders a break or something.
Yeah, you can still milk a goat 3 years after it gives birth.
That's utterly ridiculous.
Oh.
See what you did there. Very cool.
Oh, glad you could join us, Seamus.
Yeah. I'm surprised you guys didn't hear the dog. She came in here and was going like... I thought someone would surely say something about it.
No, we didn't see that.
So, we just thought you were finger popping your asshole, Shano.
Bought a fucking screw machine.
Mm.
So it's going to be here in 2 weeks. So I got a lot of reading to do.
You could just employ Tony to give you some applications advice.
He's better off having Danny Rudolph, being that he bought a citizen.
Oh, true.
I got to show you anything right there, buddy.
Yeah, that's true.
He's the man.
I talked to him a little bit, and he's just like, oh, it's no big deal. It's easy. Don't worry. And I'm just like, fuck you, man.
Everything is backwards. Z minus and positive are opposite. G3s and G2s are fucking backwards. You go, you learn that machine, then go back over to one of the fucking Mazaks, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Well, the reason we went with, the main reason we went with the Citizen was I went to an Esprit workshop up in Reno, and it was at this reseller called Spinetti.
Yeah, I know Paige.
Yeah, and they only sell, like, Citizens. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew, I could tell just by being there that they really, really knew their shit. And I talked to the guy a little bit while I was there. And he was like, oh, yeah, like, you know, if someone's buying, like, their first screw machine, and this was over a year ago I was there, and he's like, you know, we come in with them, and he goes, their first four or five parts, we'll totally work with them, you know, on it. And so when we really started, there's this little valve we make, and that there's four pieces to it. And all of a sudden, like 2 weeks ago, SpaceX said next year we want, for 2021, we want 200 of these valves complete per week.
Wow. Oh, I thought you said per month, per week. That's a different thing altogether. Yeah.
Yeah. 200 per week of a, you know, assembled, tested valve complete. So we're really having to basically like build a whole process just around getting that done.
That's like pretty high production numbers for those guys, isn't it?
Yeah, they're. I heard the guy was just down there yesterday. Your buddy Clinton Albert. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went through his interview and he sent me some. He's been messaging me for fucking weeks, but he went down there for a level 2 manufacturing engineer. He gets to go see a fucking launch. I think he said today. But he also said they're expanding and opening another place in Texas in 2 years. So it sounds like they're fucking really getting big.
It's already open down there in Boca Chica.
I don't know if it's the same one or if they're opening another one. I didn't even know
they have a few DMU-80s down there, and then they're building like an actual, because it's close to the coast, they're building like an actual resort. They have job postings for people with like resort building or you know, architecture experience, and it's going to be for like their people, you know? But yeah, they have a whole facility down there because they're testing the new vehicle down there and the new engines. And they keep blowing up tanks. And then we were in a meeting and the owner asked him, what's with all this? Like, you guys are like, you're actually like really good at like building tanks. And they're like, oh, we just have like some local like pipe welders welding these things up. Like, we don't have like, you know, real high end like aerospace welders welding these things.
So when you say resort, will they have like a swimming pool and stuff and golf carts?
No, it'll be on the ocean.
Oh.
It's a nice pool.
It's going to float like an island.
It's a very tidal workspace.
Yeah. No, they basically, they moved in and bought like this huge piece of property. And then there's like this town there called Boca Chica.
Mm.
And the people down there are all pissed off. It's like, it was kind of like this little retirement community. And apparently SpaceX offered all the people there like 1.5 times the market value for their property. But people were just like, no, fuck you. This is our home. We're not leaving. But every time they do some sort of test, all those people get evacuated as a precaution. And so they're all pissed off at SpaceX about it.
They should be pissed off at their city because the city is what allowed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The people that make the deals.
Must be why he's always threatening to move Tesla to Texas, too, then, huh?
They're already building a plant out there for the Cybertruck. They're building it in Austin.
That's smart. Mm. That's smart. Fuck California. I could not even...
Haas is building a, like, 3 million square foot facility in Henderson, Nevada.
Yeah, I heard that last year.
I don't know if it's just, like, an expansion or if they're going to move the whole fucking shebang out there.
No, they've
been Oxnard forever.
Yeah, no,
but now they've got, you know, quite a bit of clout. I'm sure they could get a lot of tax breaks and incentives for, you know, moving somewhere else. Because, like, yeah. I don't know how that works. Like, if you start somewhere and then, you know, you're basically just this little fucking peon company and then you grow into this huge, like, powerhouse. Is there, like, negotiating room? Because you're already there, you know?
Yeah, you guys seem like it's so restrictive. Everything. All I hear on the news is California's doing this, and I'm going, holy fuck, like the land of the free or whatever just doesn't sound like that to me. Crazy.
Yeah. Apparently, if you move your business out of state, the state of California goes after you for tax evasion.
What?
Because they know that's why you're moving your business out of state is to get away from the taxes.
Criminal.
I don't know. We'll see. I heard Titan was going through some shit because I know a guy that worked for us works there. But we'll see.
So hang on. So even if you're saying because you're talking about registered businesses in California, if you then re-register a business in Texas and then deregister your business in California, surely that's it. They can't come after you then. Surely.
No, they're going after people, man.
That's bonkers.
Fucking ridiculous.
The whole state's bonkers. They just shut everyone down, and then our fucking governor is on. He does a press conference every Tuesday, and he gets on there and tells you about all the coronavirus shit. And they created like this 4-tier system with different colors, and like to move to the next tier, your positivity rate of test has to go down a certain amount, and then your it's some other metric, but like when you look at them, it's really impossible. Like you have to have to get into like the second least restrictive tier. You have to have like one or less positive tests per 100,000 residents or 100,000 tests or something. Like it's crazy. So what they did was they put all this shit in place, and then the more that testing was expanded, I mean, of course, you're going to see more positive cases because now there's more testing, but now they're using that like against the whole thing, and it's totally fucking stupid. And then it's like I said in the chat, like the people making decisions aren't impacted by these decisions at all. Like they're still getting paid. They're still working. And it's, I mean, just thousands of small businesses are closing up. Like in this town over next to where the shop is, Roseville, like every like small like restaurant is like ass out, totally done, closed up for good, because we've been going through this shit since March. And now this is this is the third time they've been told, okay, that's it. You can't, you guys can't do operations anymore unless it's outside. Well, a lot of places don't have room to do outside because we're California and you have everyone trying to live on a postage stamp.
I think that's
now it's like all the inventory that they just bought now is, you know, it's got to go.
I think that's kind of funny. It reminds me of something that I think Tony posted the other week. It was like, so let me get this straight. We can eat at a restaurant if we move the outside to, if we make the inside outside or something like that. It's true because like where I'm at, obviously we've got like colder weather rolling in. So you see a lot of that. You see like a lot of these like outdoor dining pavilions or tents set up. And it's just, it's so confusing. Like I understand that, you know, if you keep your distance from people and you wear a mask, like you'll probably be fine. But like, it is a little bit ridiculous. You know, I understand the restaurants trying to do what they can to stay open and stuff, which is, you know, good. But at some point, everybody's going to get this.
Yeah, and it just goes back to like the very like base bottom of the line like healthcare, and like people, you know, the people are keep saying, well, the cost of healthcare is exploding and blah blah blah, and it's like, well, you have all these people that are on dialysis, that are having cancer treatment, that are having these very complex, you know, surgeries and heart bypasses and all this shit. And you have a very large population of people that 150 years ago would have been fucking dead years ago. And it's like the cost of that preservation of life and the technology and research that goes into that, that's what's driving all the costs. So what do you want to do? You know, do you want to fucking go backwards? And, you know, if you're 85 and you get a cold, you're just fucking dead. And I feel like it's that same way with Corona. Like there's a lot of like, the vast majority of people are dying have 2 to 3 underlying conditions, or what they're saying.
Yeah, you know, but
it's like at what point do you, all
this anyways? Because you know what? When they say you can sit on an airplane right next to some motherfucker and fly for 10, 12 hours, that's okay. But anywhere else you have to go, you're supposed to be 6 feet, or you can't have dinner somewhere with plexiglass all around you, or you could go to Costco and it's fucking shoulder to shoulder. But yeah, it's total bullshit. They're making up their own rules. And it's just fucking stupid.
And it's, they keep saying, listen to the science. We're letting the science drive this. And it's like, well, the science has been saying for months now that the spike is being caused by gatherings at people's homes, not by people at restaurants, not by people at stores, not by people out shopping. They're saying it's happening at people's homes. And so it's like, well, you know, tell people, look, if you're going to be at home, you need to be careful. This is where it's happening. Don't close all these other places. And then now they're putting in a curfew so that you stay home.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
So it's okay.
I'm
over
telling
people that the big spread is happening inside homes. So now you close everything else down. So now people have to stay at home. Then you put in a curfew saying people have to stay at home. It's just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I was just on an airplane like whatever 2 weeks ago, and it was really kind of surprising to me. It doesn't really seem like the airlines are taking it all that seriously, because they still did like a beverage service during the flight. So what that means basically is they're basically encouraging you to take off your mask in an enclosed space and have a drink. They're not spacing out rows in the airplane or anything. I mean, it's the flight. One of my flights was full. So it's kind of confusing. I mean, I don't get it.
Did you have to wear a mask on the plane?
Yeah, you have to. But if you whenever you're having your beverage or whatever they give you, you can take your mask off. Or if you bring a food on the airplane from, you know, the terminal or whatever, you can eat that. Like across the aisle from me, there was this girl and she was eating like a fucking box of fried chicken or something like for a half an hour flight. And it's like, okay, like, I get it. Like, you're entitled to eat and do whatever you want. But, like, are we going to take it seriously? Or, like, can we let people do what they want? Because there can't be, like, this gray area.
You're talking about consistency. And that's been the problem. No matter where you are in the world, you think, well, if they're going to make a rule, it should just be that's it, you know, for everything. And you go, righto, at least that makes sense. But when when there's no, like when, like what you've described, you know, people gathering outside or not having to wear masks when they're in a fucking supermarket or whatever, you go, well, that's, that just doesn't make sense. It would make sense if they said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You have to do this, and it's the same for everyone. And you go, okay, well, maybe you might get on board with it. But when they're making two different rules for, you know, whoever's business it's affecting, like that's completely crazy.
Yep.
How are you doing, man? How are things down there?
Yeah. Well, I was just saying just before you jumped in, we are so busy at the moment that, you know, and I said in the chat, you almost can't catch your breath, you know. It's just, we're just, you know, got all these orders coming in because we've been, you know, vying for this big customer and we've been doing this project, and now the enormity of what we're trying to do is all come to fruition, and you go, oh shit.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so we got, you know, we had the new machine arrive, and we've been sort of, I've got the apps guys here again on Monday doing some training with my guys, and then we had the mill turn up, boom, and then yesterday because I'm still looking for a second-hand machine like the LU45s or even an LU45, so I found an LU35 in Texas, so gave the guy a PO for that. So I'm just getting the riggers to pick that up next week and get it on a ship and bring it over to me.
Nice. There you go.
Because, I mean, there's
Have you shipped many secondhand machines like internationally like that?
No. Yeah. If you want to,
that seems kind of scary.
Gonna be it. Yeah. I think you're right.
I mean, if they don't rig that thing right, or they don't strap it down in the container right, or whatever.
Yeah. How much does that even cost?
The machine?
No, to get it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So, it's gonna be about $10,000.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Not really.
I mean, it's not much less than that to like ship a machine across the country.
I mean, it's still just, you know, for in terms of movement, it's still just a cubic meter space that you're paying for on a vessel, you know. So
yeah, are they gonna just load it right out of Galveston?
What was that, sorry?
Are they gonna just take it right out of Galveston Bay there in Texas?
Yes, I think that's, so I've got to finalize the details on Tuesday, but yeah, we're just looking for what the best option's gonna be, whether it's to, you know, cart it all the way across by rail to, you know, LA or somewhere like that, and then ship it across, or I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Right on,
man. I
haven't
got the details yet. It all just happened at the weekend, and it's all a bit scary.
Yeah.
I've never bought a secondhand machine from anywhere else, because we normally buy new machines.
There's if you look at the website, like BidSpotter, there's an unreal amount of auctions happening in Texas right now. It's pretty fucking sad.
Did you have anybody check that machine out?
No.
Okay.
I know, right?
You didn't have fucking Clayton go look at it for you?
I should have done. It was a bit like the problem is all that, you know. There's one machine, like for example, you look on these websites, whether it be like machinetools.com or what you describe like Bids or whatever, and then there's all these brokers and they're all selling the same fucking machine. Yeah.
I've seen that.
You know, and I'm going, well, what am I? Oh, no, I just found the whole process pretty confusing. But I said, well, you got to pick somebody. And then, so we looked at references for the person, looked at previous history, and he all sounded kosher. But, I mean, we'll soon see when we start paying money, because we haven't paid any money yet.
That's what Neil was famous for, was for buying used fucking Akumas off of eBay. And the last one he wanted to buy was that LT300M. And I'm like, look, motherfucker, we need to have somebody come check this out, because the last couple you bought's been some real doozies, and I've had to dump some money into them and get them up to do what we can do. So he's okay. So I had actually paid Akuma to go out there and do a sweep on it, check the ball screw, you know, give it the once over, and say that it was sound and it was lined up and shit. And it was in a big warehouse, and they did. But my point of my story is, even though I checked out sweep, it had run fucking cast iron its whole life. So when we got to the shop, all it did was just puke out black shit and make shitty parts all fucking day long. So yeah, it was really worth the money spent having Akuma check it out.
that's a good point though. Because we have a, like, globally with Akuma, we've still got a decent relationship. So yeah, maybe I'll check that out on Monday. Just see what options are available for me to get somebody to have a look at this machine.
Yeah,
that's a good idea actually. I wish I thought of that. and then I'm trying to employ people at the moment as well, which is, you know, we've flogged this horse to death so many times, but I'm trying to basically employ another 20 people, and it's virtually impossible.
You're at the point where you should almost, I mean, in my opinion, you should be looking at going automated and fuck people.
Yeah, well. We've got I've got that new Fanuc robot sitting in a box at the moment. But
you got to get him out.
No, I know. I know. But you know what it's like, Tony? You go, right, we've got all this work, and that work still needs to be done. And then you've got to try and commission two brand new machines, get training through on them. Then, we should be trying to commission this robot. So it's. There's just not enough hours in the day. I'm just like fully stretched. I go, we also.
Like one machine is just a mill, easy enough. But once you step into like a multitasking machine, like your NTX, like there's a whole, I mean, there's pages of G&M codes that you have to learn that are associated with that. Like, unclamp the B axis, move the B axis, clamp the B axis, you know, and just everything else that goes along with that. Like, that's not a quick learning curve by any means.
Oh, I thought Fusion 360 did all that.
It does.
All right.
It depends on how good their post is.
But I also went up to Auckland last week because I was interested about the whole plane scenario. And, so, you know, we're like here in New Zealand, we're in a much, well, it's promoted that we're in a much better space, you know, because of coronavirus and everything else. And, there must be Tony walking through his workshop. Oh, the sound of machines in the morning. So it has not been mandatory for people to wear masks on a plane here. However, the airline staff, like the trolley dollies and that, they still have to wear face masks. So I'm like, well, I feel a little bit shit if I don't wear one, because these people are made to wear one on the plane. And yet there's probably only 30% of the people on the plane were wearing masks. You know, and it's the same deal. You go, well, you either make it a rule or you don't. As simple as that. But anyhow.
Yeah. No harm done from actually wearing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wear one all day at work just because, you know, I think we're up to like 60 people now. And then you think about it and it's like you're not just in contact with them. You're in contact with anyone that they've all been in contact with. And I mean, they're still finding things out about this stuff. And I would hate, you know, for my kids to get it and then facing, you know, some long-term fucking symptom of it or something. So it doesn't really bother me to wear one. It's not a big deal. Some people make a huge deal out of it. You know, oh, I couldn't breathe. I was getting dizzy and I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a fucking deal.
You're doing it as well, Albert.
Yeah, we weren't. I mean, we weren't because we're obviously pretty small and there's really not like a lot of people here. But my one employee got it and he was out for 2 weeks. And then I was pretty sick like the last 2 weeks. I don't know if I had it or not, but I think it's just easier if we just all wear them. Honestly, it's not like that big of a deal, like Shane said. So,
well, shit. What about you, Tony? What's you've got a pretty strong view about the masks, haven't you?
Yeah, I play the game when I go into all the stores and stuff. I wear, you know, I don't wear them here in my shop. It's me, Katie, and one other guy. So, no. And we're all looking through microscopes all day anyway. So, if you have a mask on, you go look through the microscope, and the next guy goes and looks through the microscope, fuck that. You're going to get the germs. So, yeah.
And what's work like for you at the moment, Tony?
It's extremely busy, and I've been trying to fix or repair all the shit that's going down by myself without having to pay the funds to have somebody else come in and do it. But one of my LTs went down last week with the turret clamp issues. We run a lot of brass on that machine, and after so long, when it goes out to index and come back in, the piston seal gets embedded with brass, and it just doesn't want to lock back in, so it times out and won't move. So anyway, I got them coming out after Thanksgiving, and we're going to pull the turrets off, and I'm going to walk through with these guys and realign it and clock it and all that shit, so the next time, next year, I could do it completely by myself and not have to pay them come out to do it. But yeah, and then other than that, the whole fucking coolant pump issue, come to find out, I took it apart because it was tripping my switch. Well, I did find a couple of bad components in the pump, but the fucking root of all evil was the contactor switch was fucking melted and not giving it all the power that it needed to perform like it was supposed to. So I found one of those on eBay. I found a new one for $270. I found a shit ton on eBay for like $26. I bought one. They guaranteed it. I took it apart, looked inside the guts, put it in the machine yesterday, and had Jazzy here running parts all fucking day. Because what would happen is we'd have people running parts and the machine would stop and you go through the MO2 and it was done, but the fucking coolant's still spraying full blast. If you open the door, you're going to catch a shower. Or the other way around, you hit go and the coolant won't fucking come on. So you have to go back and unstick the fucking little toggle on the back. And yeah, I'm glad to have that done, but at least that thing's working correctly now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one of my other screw machine, the L&S bar feeder motors, took a shit on that so it won't load a bar. And I've got a hunt that down and cut and splice a new one in. But other than that, just setting up machines around them and keeping guys going.
Stop the podcast! And Shanus enters the room.
What's going on?
Hey, Shane.
Yeah.
Shane, I've got a request. A musical request. Do you think you'd be able to do it for me?
I'll try.
Okay. Can you play... fuck, I need some help. Tony, help me. Think of a song, quick.
Can't touch this.
Can't touch this, yeah.
No, go, Shane, I can't play that.
Albert, think of a song. It can't be a love one.
What about that song that everyone's playing while they drink cranberry juice now? What song is that?
Oh, Fleetwood Mac. Go, Shane.
Fucking useless.
Wow, he's good. Star Wars.
Oh, I think that's right. That's what they should be playing whilst drinking cranberry juice whilst skating down a highway. That's fucking so good. Oh, thanks, Shane. That was excellent. It's time well spent.
Very nice.
Let's get on with the podcast.
Dun, 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 dun.
ERP systems. Now, Albert, I know we posted this up because we knew that you were in the process of implementing an ERP system. So I figured it'd be a good opportunity to see how you've been going with that and sort of tell us your pros and cons of what you've been going through.
We just started to go through the implementation process and we haven't gotten very far. We got pretty buried here, so that kind of gets put on the back burner when we get buried. So, but yeah, we did start working on it, and a lot of it, there's like a lot of upfront or front end kind of work where you build into the system like material that you order, or you are setting up like your inventory or different processes that you use so that when you go to actually start using the ERP system, it's a pretty easy task of just picking the things that you need to, you know, put into a job or something.
What product did you go for?
We just got Job Boss. Honestly, I know there's a ton of what's that?
I was gonna say what made you pick that?
Well, I know there's other products out there, but I know that they're a pretty they're pretty well known company. They've been around for damn near forever. And it seemed like they were going to have pretty good support. And it honestly, at this point, the way I look at it is any ERP system is going to be better than what we had. So that's kind of why I went that route, I guess.
So you're paying a monthly fee to have a seat on an ERP server. Is that what you're doing at the moment? Yeah.
We could have gone two different ways with it. We could have gone a cloud-based, or we could have gone like an enterprise-based. We opted for the cloud-based because right now, like our accounting software, we're using QuickBooks, but we're using QuickBooks like cloud-based QuickBooks. So I guess they don't integrate with cloud-based QuickBooks no matter which like version of the software you went with, if you went with the enterprise or if you went with cloud-based. So it didn't really matter. Cloud-based seemed kind of more convenient. We don't have like a ton of users for it right now. It's really just going to be me or Cindy, and we can just share a single seat. So for me, I just got it to kind of bring some organization to the shop, from like ordering or reordering stuff to, scheduling, also kind of keeping track of like our quoting and kind of costing too, I think was going to be beneficial.
So what does that cost?
I want to say it was like, there were some upfront costs. Wasn't too terribly much upfront. The upfront stuff really just kind of covered some initial training, or training sessions, I guess you could say. I think they give you end up buying like 12, I think it's like 12 hours of training. And then, at that point, you should be good to go on your own. I want to say it's like $100 a month or something for the cloud-based.
Right. Okay.
So that's not terrible.
It's not too bad. There's so when we put the post up on Instagram, there was quite a few people that had various different degrees of success and failures using ERP systems, but all of the comments that you read through, it really was, yeah, well, I really, really want an ERP, but I suddenly realized that there's a lot of, like you said, the upfront and doing part, you know, setup is what basically ends up stopping people from going full noise. And then by the time they get so big, they think, fuck, I should have done it from the beginning, you know, like at an earlier stage.
Well, I mean, it's a huge process, and some of them make it easier because you can, you know, you can export things from Excel or whatever, as long as you do it and, you know, just move columns around. It's easy enough. But like, so we have JobBoss and we've been using it for 6 or 7 years. But we're kind of at the point where we've outgrown it, I feel like. And it, when you're trying to, because we have so many different departments and things, and now we're looking at like beginning a second quarter next year, taking the whole company AS9100. We're kind of looking at into some other options, and what's right at the front is just like coding our own software just to, you know, fit our business and our model perfectly. And we run into issues where, you know, we're trying to track things throughout the shop or throughout the company with JobBoss, and it just doesn't work out. So I think it's something that we've just kind of outgrown at this point. But it's a huge, you know, project to go from one to another, especially when you have to keep records of everything that you've done up to that point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. And so for you, with all the aerospace stuff, you're basically having to document every single piece that goes through, and with reports. And as a user, are you, you know, who's sort of organizing at the front end for you guys? Have you got like a production planner person that's just basically doing all that, or are you setting up items yourself?
One of the owners, she kind of focuses like on sales and kind of customer relations. And in the private launch industry, like things are always changing. And so they'll call up. I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, in the same week, you know, one customer to call up and change their priorities like twice. You know, hey, we know you're making these, and these for us, but now we need these ones first. And, you know, we're willing to bump the other ones to get these, you know, sooner. And so it's because of like the rapid change, the way the machine shop scheduling works in Job Boss, it makes it difficult, especially because we're scheduled out to like April next year. So you can't just like slide things around all that easy. It's a little cumbersome.
Did you guys try, you said that you guys have been using it for 7 years or more. Like, did you have something before that? Or was it built from the ground up?
No, it was just basically like a myriad of Excel spreadsheets and things that were used at that point. And as we've grown and we've gotten bigger, we've found that we're using a lot of those and working outside of Job Boss and working more in like spreadsheets that have kind of like we'll write like queries. So it'll pull things out of Job Boss into a spreadsheet, into a different format that makes it kind of easier to process. So like once you start working outside of it, that's when, you know, that throws up the red flag that this isn't the right product for us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And as the years go by, we're like increasingly working outside of it. And it's like the scheduler just wrote one the other day to where he can type in, because we're using another, software on the quality side called Unipoint, and it kind of handles all the quality stuff. And so he figured out how to pull data from that. And so now he has an Excel document that he can just type in a part number, and then it'll show you like all the thread gauges that are required for that part, which you can't do that inside of Job Boss. And so because now we're running at two different locations, and again, things are constantly changing, and we're trying to, you know, send, you know, now we're trying to keep track of tools and gauges at two different places, maintain calibration, like all this stuff, like it makes it a little more complex. So we're basically looking at hiring a programmer and just writing our own software at this point.
You'd think, I don't know, I feel like every ERP system that I've ever seen, none of them are ever, ever going to be perfect, no matter what. And even if you employ now, say, a programmer to write a system for you guys, like knowing how the business currently runs, like that then could potentially change even in the next couple of years. And you write all of this, you get everything set up, and then you go, oh, actually, we don't want to do it like that now. We want to do it like this. And that seems like that's a lot of resource for something like, where, you know.
And so we've had custom things made for Job Boss working with them. But the way it works is they'll write you like a custom module, but like you don't own it. They do. And then as their you have to pay like a maintenance fee for that module. And as their Job Boss, the core software updates, then they'll update that to work along with it. But it's just like absorbently expensive.
What do you do, Tony? Have you got a system, or are you putting things on spreadsheets, or what do you do?
For what?
Well, for for everything.
I'm serious. Like, for what?
For recording goods inwards, planning, dispatch, when your customer orders come in, when they've got to be out.
Katie pretty much takes care of that. We go off of what Parker, I mean, the other customers are obviously smaller, but Parker has what they call, they have all that spreadsheet on the computer, and she logs on to our account, and it says all the orders that have been placed and when they're due. And so when, kind of like what Boomer was saying, when they try and prioritize what they want, or they change it midweek, you know, quit running eights, go run tens. She makes sure that they change the dates in their system, so we don't, because we get a report card every month on how we're doing, quality and on time delivery and shit like that. And so if they ask you for a favor to change up and go to this part instead of that part, and all that part you were doing now is coming in late, and if they don't switch that in their computer, then you look like an idiot. And yeah, that's about all I can think of, you know.
Oh, I see. So they, like,
I just want to maintain like a level of organization here. Like basically the way that we've always done stuff is basically out of my freaking brain. And then I realized that it's not that effective at all, actually, because I'm not that smart. So, you know, like, so then I started, you know, like doing things to stay a little bit more organized, like putting together like a spreadsheet to kind of track stuff through the shop, or like, I guess kind of like a work schedule, I guess I call it. And it's like a document that I share with everybody and everybody can see it. And, you know, I basically do the job of like scheduling and planning right now. And I kind of update that spreadsheet basically daily, and it's fine, but like there's a lot of things that it doesn't do, you know, that I think could help streamline our process a little bit. Like I guess like right now we're a super capable shop. We have like a lot of capabilities and a lot of potential, but I'd like to kind of get this machine a little bit better oiled and working a little bit smoother and more efficiently. So if that means that I can spend less time on reordering materials when we get like a repeat job in, because I don't have to like dig through some files to figure out what size stock I got and where I bought it from and what the last price was and this and that, like it, you know, hopefully will save some of my time, and or I can pawn those kind of tasks off onto other people, because it's all of a sudden made those tasks so much simpler to deal with.
Danny Rudolph had put a comment on there saying like he would really like to implement an ERP, but he's just sort of restrained himself from sort of doing it. And I think he's now wishing that he had done what you're doing and implementing now.
Well, I think that the advantage to something like Danny is that he's very small. And he doesn't really have like a lot of employees. I think it's like him and his dad, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And his wife.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which is great because like I think maintaining a level of organization at that size is a lot easier. But when you start to add other people into the equation, I think it becomes exponentially more difficult.
Mm. Yeah. And I think there's like, you know, there's also other complications too, because like when you're, if your, you know, average order is 20,000 pieces and you make a small miscalculation, that can, you know, be pretty destructive.
100%.
Any sort of planning or scheduling or anything.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, 15, 30 seconds is, you know, it turns out to be, you know, a week or two or something.
I just for anyone that's listening. So I found this sort of website. This website called Captera.com, and that gives an overview of pretty much every ERP system out there and the pricing that goes with them. So I thought it was quite good just to, I mean, well, one, to see the reviews on particular ERP systems like MYOB and NetSuite and Sightline and JobBoss, and it gives a breakdown of what each of those systems cost, and then there are people on there put in their pros and cons. So I don't know if you guys had seen that, but I thought, well, shit, I better have a look at some of this stuff before we start talking about it, just in case someone else asks us. But there's fucking, there's like at least 1,000 on there. It's crazy.
I wonder though, maybe Bert can chime in with this because he just bought one, but are ERPs more like standardly priced? Because like with CAM software, it seems like the rep always wants to come out and see your shop, and then the price is always what they think you can afford to pay.
We didn't,
you know, it's
we
always
didn't really
like the kind of this massive boondoggle.
We didn't have anybody come out here. I feel like there's going to be, I mean, different ERP systems for different shop environments. Like, you know, we all do machining, obviously, but we kind of all have our own niche specialties. And like you, especially Shane, like you guys are an engineering company that does manufacturing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a very different, I think, manufacturing approach or workflow than, say, a company like Minor Tony's that are more job shop oriented.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think in that regard, like, a different ERP system might kind of serve different functions for, you know, each one of us. Like, honestly, I got JobBoss because, I guess, kind of the same reason I got MasterCam. Like, I didn't really know much about cam software when I bought it, and I wanted to get something that I knew was going to be around, that I knew was pretty widely available used, I guess. You know, like, if I'm going to look for a programmer, chances are it's going to be pretty easy to find somebody who knows MasterCam.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so, you know, there's, I think there's some value in that for a company like myself.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And if it's something you haven't used before too, like, there's plenty of YouTube videos out there, you know, on, yep, on how to, you know, use MasterCam.
Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel here, you know?
Yeah. No, totally. So, that totally makes sense.
I think that, you know, as anybody who runs and operates a business, I think, recognizes that it's definitely an uphill battle. So anything that you can do to make things easier on yourself, is kind of just helping yourself out, you know, like standardizing on a certain machine and only having one of those machines, it'll make your life exponentially easier. But yeah.
Oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey. Hey, Mickey. So we've got kind of a weird situation going on at work.
Oh, yeah?
We added another shift.
Right.
And with that, you got to hire more people. And so, man, we've hired, like, 8 people in the last month or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, that's a lot that's a lot of new people, man.
Yeah, that means you need more toilet paper.
Oh, man. Well, no, just like onboarding that many people and getting that many people up to speed on kind of how you do things and your processes and things going on in your shop. And not one of them has seen a Mazak. So then you got, you know, additional training there. Like, we've been stretched pretty thin just getting that going, you know.
So what is the shift?
We're filling out the night shift. We lost a guy and then we added... I think 4 people.
Jesus. Where'd you lose him, Matt?
He went to the Navy.
Oh.
Yeah. Was that a
Isn't that what you do when you join the Navy?
I think that's when certain people come on board.
Oh, okay. I
thought that was the Star Trek Enterprise that made that sound. Like,
whenever Kirk comes to the bridge.
Take it to the bridge.
When you've,
the bosun's whistle, it lets you know, there's an officer on deck.
Hmm.
There's a bunch of different ones. I watched a YouTube video on it a while back of this guy dressed kind of like a 17th century sailor, and he ran through all the different whistles.
Wow. Why did you even get onto YouTube to do that?
Because I was curious. I wanted to know.
Gummies like can do that to you.
It's like, you know, this one's going to begin with a short blast. And then it's going to go on to 2 longer blasts. And that's going to tell you that, you know, the first officer's mate or something is on board. And it was a whole thing.
So just let me just go back to your shift, because now we're talking about sailor's whistles. So you obviously had somebody that was still running the night shift and you've just added people to their shift.
Yes.
Or is it just it's completely there was no night shift and you've just basically built that up?
No, we had a small night shift, I think 3 people, and then we've added 4 people to it, I believe. And so it's just like kind of a challenge because, you know, you try to bring people to the day shift for a while and kind of get them up to speed on things. But some people, their schedule doesn't allow for that. You know, they've got school during the day or they've got kids they got to watch, you know, until they drop them off with their you know, baby mama or whatever. So just trying to get all that going. So we had like a meeting the other day because we're running 3 shifts at 2 different facilities. So we have people that, you know, have never even met each other. And so we had a big meeting the other day with everybody from all shifts and just kind of, you know, went over some things that had been happening. We lost a run of parts because on the back flank of the thread, there was like a little kind of like hump there. And it was kind of bizarre because the threads all still gauged on two different sets of gauges that were in calibration. But when we put the parts on a Keyence optical system, it flagged that the thread was bad. And so then we started looking at it. And if you look at it at like 10x magnification, it looks fine. And then you go to 30, and then you can see like, wow, it looks like there's like a little like galling or tearing on the back of this thread. And then you go to 50, and then you can really see it.
How was the thread being created?
It was being turned, cut in a lathe.
Single pointed? Okay.
Single point, yeah. With a Vardex topping insert. You know, they make nice stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're... I went back and I pulled all the inserts for that pitch that we had at both shops, and we put them up on the comparator with the 50x lens, and we're checking them out, and everything was fine. So I kind of went to their used, like their scrap yard, you know, for the scrap bin for the inserts, and kind of dug around the top layer trying to find any 12 pitch threading inserts, external threading inserts. And I found one, and I looked at it on the comparator, and everything looked fine. So I don't know if it was like they had a built up edge or if the insert has some sort of chip on it or what the deal was, but,
How'd you fix the problem?
We remade the parts.
Well, I get that, but like on the same way, with the same type of inserts.
Yeah. And they came out fine. So now, again, being, you know, now that we're this, you know, we're not the little 4,500 square foot shop that we used to be. Now we're having to create a thread visual acceptance criteria document, and it's going to have different photos as to what's acceptable and what's not. And then a part of our in-process inspection for threads is going to be a visual check under 30 times magnification minimum.
But hold on, before you, but I mean, so you've decided, or the company's decided to do that based on this one failure. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So did you actually get to the root cause of it though? What was actually the problem?
No, we couldn't figure anything out. The program was fine. I even checked, I went through and checked all the turning parameters in the different machines in relation to threads. Because you can do, you know, like zigzag threading, or you can add chamfer strokes to them and stuff. I checked everything. All the machines had all the exact same parameters. The program was programmed correctly. Everything was running the same speed, the same starting and ending points. Like, there was really nothing that should have created this. So it really had to come down to the tool is kind of what it came down to. But we couldn't verify that, you know, that's what it was.
So did you get like an insert, another new insert, like out of the same box, like the same lot?
I checked every insert that we had in the entire company that can do that pitch, from both facilities, and everything was fine.
Well, that's kind of scary. Weird. That you guys don't know how it happened.
Yeah, it's real scary.
Oh, I agree.
And so that was kind of when we did our root cause analysis. You know, it basically came down to deformities like this are inherently a cause of machining. You know, like it can happen to anybody, right? Like, you can get a small chip on an insert and then your thread gauge can still go to an extent. And so it was, you know, it basically came down to this is something that the process we're using, this can happen at any time. So we're going to have to implement additional measures to ensure that we're not getting that.
I hate, like me personally, I hate that you're putting in another extra process.
Oh, I hate it too.
Without even knowing why you're doing it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that seems crazy to me.
I spent a couple days like looking at inserts and, like I said, digging through the dead insert box and pulling inserts and looking for this sort of thing. And I mean, couldn't find anything. We even put that insert back in the threading tool, or put a different, you know, a new insert in the threading tool and ran that thread for like half a day, in that same machine and couldn't get it to replicate it.
So it couldn't have been something as silly as someone turned the coolant off at some point.
No, it was too uniform for that. It was the same on, 180, 200 parts.
Well, that is, I think you're right. Like what Tony said, I think that's pretty scary that you guys haven't actually got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because just having an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff doesn't mean that it's going to stop you from not having to fucking rework all the parts again, because you're just going to basically make these parts and then go, oh, let's double check them at 50 times magnification on our visual fucking blah, 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 and go, oh, shit, yeah, we just realized they're still wrong. Oh, fuck, we still don't know why.
Yeah, hopefully at that point, though, we catch it after, two or three parts, not, a whole job.
So you're saying that you're now 100% inspecting?
Yep, all threads.
Jesus. That, like, in a production sense,
we already have a microscope.
That's a lot of resource, man. That's a lot of time you spend doing that.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, it's on the customer interface side. So if we, you can't send it to them and be like, well, it still gauges because the customer has visual and acceptance requirements. And at the magnification that they call out that they're going to check them under, I mean, you can see it. It's a deformity in the thread form, but the pitch mic read correctly, and the thread gauge went two different sets.
And did you speak to the operators?
Oh yeah, so it was a whole thing, man. Like I said, it was a couple day investigation.
Fucking hell! Think of the hours that go into that.
I mean, what do you tell them? They're like, hey, I ran the gauge on every part like I was supposed to. It is a SAE fitting on that side, so there's a bunch of angles and dimensions called out. And so they check it on the optical comparator, but it only had the 10 times lens on it and everything else was in. So, I mean, they really had no reason to look further. You know what I mean? And that kind of brings up like one of the things in our meeting was like, I was kind of like, well, if you can't trust the gauge, what do you do?
Yeah. But like you said, at some point, you almost hope that you hope that you see it again and you catch it at the point when you see it again, and then you can understand why. And then maybe you don't have to do it after that point. It's when you have a problem and then you literally have no idea what has caused the problem. That is.
Yeah. I mean, I checked everything that I could possibly think of that would cause something like that and just came up with nothing.
What's the material? Right.
It's 316.
Why? I mean, I just my opinion, but I believe that Sandvik is superior in threading. Totally. Why have you guys not used them?
That's just what the company used when I got there, and we never had issues up to this point.
Yeah.
I mean, Vardex isn't exactly like small potatoes, especially when it comes to threading. Like that's kind of what they specialize in.
Yeah, I've used their stuff before too. Like you said, you can't even point the finger at them because we really don't even know what happened.
No. And I mean, I think like 3 years ago, we had a box of topping inserts that was taking the major out of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But we caught that pretty quick and it wasn't a big deal. And then we, sent the inserts back and talked to them. And they're like, oh, yeah, we had a bad, lot to get through or whatever. But yeah, that's scary too, because then it's like, well, shit, like we caught it this time. What about last time? Or what about the time before that? But
yeah, everybody makes mistakes, even the people that are making the shit that we use.
It's
all
a manufactured product,
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. Well, speaking of threading, that your previous post, Tony, where you're setting up your Fetty rollers, that stuff is good, eh? Like when you set up those rollers, it's just the threads that can come out of those is just beautiful.
It is, but it's very stressful dialing one in. Somebody asked me on that post, like, well, if you're doing a quarter 20 and then you run the amount of parts that you know is documented that's good and it's time to put new rolls in, do you have to readjust or retweak it? And no, you take it apart, you top those rolls out, you blow it off, clean it, put new ones in, and it's right back where it was. But the process of getting to that point is pretty stressful and pretty fucking scary because it is when you bring that head down over and you're on single block and you hit go, it's either going to work or it's not. And the sound it makes when it doesn't work.
I say that all the time.
It sounds terrible. It's fucking he's not. So you have to sneak up on it, and that's why even in the pictures that I had, the part was like, you know, 4 inches of thread, and I only threaded an inch of it because worst case scenario, I mean, if it's a little bit off, I'm not going to try and stick it in 4 inches because it's not going to like that. And yeah, it was the first. Even though I adjusted it, and I have documented in a closed state what size gauge pin I can push through them rolls with drag on it, so I know if I'm kind of close. And I take an existing part and try to screw it into there, but it shouldn't go in because you're forming it. But at least if it starts in there, kind of close. But 5/16 24 is not as forgiving as a 1/4 20. And so the slightest adjustment, man, and you're too tight or you're too loose. But yeah, now I got that. That's why I talked to somebody. I probably spent close to an hour and a half just dropping those 1/4 20 rolls out and putting them other ones in and dialing it. And I'm going to do is I'm going to buy another head and just leave it set for the 5/16 24 because long story short, it'll be more cost effective just to go to the shelf, grab that one, plug it in and go and leave it alone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how long does it take to set up, and just run us through the setup.
Well, I first got my feet wet on it in 2007, and luckily I was from the cable reeling guys, and he gave me his process on how. There's a manual, but luckily he told me, like, if you're going to, ultimately I end up turning that diameter like 0.2165 and to engage those three rolls that I'll make 1/4 20, but keep the minor on the low. And, I mean, I would have no clue where to fucking basically turn that. And I did, and I got that dialed. But then when you stop, my compartment for my machine on the Star was kind of close. So, I mean, I had to buy an extended Max Land guide bushing, which means you can stick the part out and thread 4 inches, but then you got to drag it back out to get the thread roller out of the way, if you guys follow me. So you're pulling it back out of the guide bushing almost all the way, but you don't want to do that because that's when things start rattling and clanking around. Well, they'll build you one with carbide a little bit longer. They call it the Max Land. So I had to buy that so I could barely pull this fucker back and barely clear the thread roll over to move it out of the way and bring the next tool in. But when the thread roll pops, it grows by about 100 thou. So I did not know that either. So I'm bringing it over in single buck and I'm clearing them in front of the face. Sweet. I thread the part. Sweet. I bring the part back out and I go to move it out of the way and it just fucking rubs right on the face of the fucking thing because I didn't know it was hanging out another 100 thou that it wasn't before it popped. So that was a learning curve. But got that figured out. And what I had done prior to actually threading it was make the part on the main and pass it over to the sub and then do the sub work and then drop it in the conveyor. And that way I could prove the process like, okay, the stud's complete. The length is perfect. The OD's turned to where it needs to be. Let's run with the thread roll. I went and run with the thread roll, learned that the head popped and it grew, got past that, parted it off, brought it to the other side. Ran it complete, and I couldn't figure out why my fucking part length was so fucking way far off. I mean, I just couldn't get it because I had like four laying on the towel next to me that I just ran that were dialed. Now I thread this one, it's completely flat. Well, that when you thread roll 1/4 20, you stretch, you pull that fucker. I mean, those thread rollers go on and they come off, and that part will grow like by about 20 to 25 thou. I did not see that one coming, so. You have to shorten everything up and allow for the stretch. And as the rollers get duller, they'll pull harder too. But anyway, like you said, to turn a 1/4 20 in one shot, it probably takes me maybe 1, maybe 2 seconds. It's just, you know, 4 inches in, out, recock the head and go. And the Fetty will do approximately 7,000 parts on one side. They're numbered 1, 2, 3 on one side and ABC on the other. And you put them back in that order and then you can do close to 7,000 on each side, and they're pretty expensive, you know, like $350 for all three rolls. But the amount of parts you get out of them, it's just money for well itself. Spent. Oh yeah, big time. Yeah. But it's so fast, it's so accurate.
The first time I saw, really sort of had any interaction with the Fetty rollers was when I was working for Sandvik. Ironically enough, there was a customer in Christchurch, and they have these Fetty rollers, and I was like, oh, I've not really had much to do with them, you know. And when I saw these things going, holy shit, you got these basically perfect threads being formed on these rods similar to what you're doing, Tony, and they were just beautiful. But the guys, when I was talking to the guys, they're like, oh, yeah, man, they're pretty fucking expensive. And if you get them wrong, they don't just go, oh, no, I've got a little chip. They go into full meltdown.
Yes, they do.
I was like, shit. Yeah. So I guess, you know, it's all about, you know, it's, when you have a product like that, you need someone to, you know, if you've never used something like that before and everyone's, you know, someone's told you that they're really good, you really want someone to help you to sort of get yourself set up, hey, so you don't make those super expensive mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything on YouTube about them?
I don't know. More than likely, I never looked. I bet there is.
Yeah, I bet you're right. Yeah, there probably is. Well, thankfully, we've reached the end of Machinist Therapy Hotline podcast.
People are going to stop listening to us, I swear.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony. Thank you,
Thank
Janus.
You.
Thank you, Albert.
Thank you, buddy.
We will. If you've got any ideas for a better show than what we're currently doing, then please email us.
Please.
We need your help.
We need some material.
Okay. Until next time, everybody. We'll see you then. Bye.
Adios.